Hi, welcome to Info Dumpies. My name's Brianne. I'm autistic, I have ADHD, my pronouns are she, her, and I think you should meditate on me taking a rip on this yard. One sec.
So peaceful. So peaceful and centered, I think. Hi, I'm Violet. I have ADHD. My pronouns are she, her. And I like to think that thinking about boobs is a form of meditation. And I try to practice that all the time.
Honestly, it depends on how you do it.
Very well, thank you.
Yeah, that's why you wear glasses, so you can see boobs better.
Exactly. Gay? You understand. Yeah, gay? That's why I wear boobs.
That's why you wear boobs?
Sorry, that's why I wear glasses. I just can't stop meditating about boobs, is my point. I got them on the brain. Yeah.
Well, I don't know if you could tell, but we're talking about meditation today.
God, we're talking about boobs, yeah. Oh, wait, no.
I took a massive rip on that car. I'm immediately feeling it.
I was going to say, are you feeling okay after that rip on the old...
Yeah, I'm feeling great. I'm a professional.
Okay.
I'm high for most podcasts I record.
Professionally.
Okay, so we're going to talk about meditation today. And we're going to talk about it. My motivations for this. Meditation has helped me a lot. And I know that sometimes I was kind of like, about it, because it's one of those things where if you go see any sort of mental health professional and you've been waiting for this appointment forever, they're like, get enough sleep, eat food, exercise, meditate. And it's like the thing they say instead of actually helping you sometimes.
Right. I definitely experienced a lot of that.
When you have ADHD, that's like the number one thing people recommend.
Yeah, that and get a journal.
Get a planner. I want to talk about meditation today because it is a helpful tool, but it is a tool in a toolbox full of other tools. It is not the right tool for every job, and it won't make you not have ADHD. It won't make you not, you know, deal with anxiety. It won't stop the horrors. But it's something that really helps me, especially with autistic meltdowns. And I think, well, us Americans are in the middle of a regime change, and things are bad and things are stressful. We are in Minneapolis. There are currently 3,000 Nazis on the ground here. And while it may seem silly to say meditate about it, I think one of our responsibilities to each other right now is to make sure that we are in a headspace to be locked into this long term to help each other. And part of that is learning to regulate ourselves so we can act under pressure and be better about that. If you don't have much motivation for meditation, thinking about it as something that helps your community because you are going to be in working order more often, not for productivity work, but to support your community, I think that's a really helpful tool to have in your toolbox, and there's such a low barrier to entry. A lot of Western meditation has been co-opted for capitalism. A lot of it is like, be more productive, focus better at work, think about yourself, just yourself all of the time, only think about yourself.
Wait, do you mean to tell me that white people have taken something that another culture does and have exploited it for personal gain?
Oh, yeah. One of them's even more annoying. I'm going to mention some of my favorite types of meditation at the end of this episode. I learned that one of my favorite types, the U.S. Army rebranded as iRest, spelled like you would iPod, with a lowercase I, for the Army, which made me so incredibly mad, not just because they were using it for that, but because they gave it such a dork-ass name.
So you might as well call it snooze-maxing. Come on.
That would be better.
Honestly, it would be better, yeah.
That would be better. On that note, most meditation has religious roots, but you do not have to be a religious person to engage in this practice. The types of meditation I'm bringing up today are open practices. You do not have to belong to any of the faiths that may have born these things to participate, but I do think having a respect for those faiths and an understanding of the context of the practice is important. So we are not like the U.S. Army, where we are taking a thing and saying, it's eye rest now. I've made it void of its context and original purpose. Different types of meditation are common among many religions. There are hundreds of types. I obviously can't cover all of them here. We owe the most popular meditation practices to those of Hindu, Zen, Taoist, and Buddhist faiths. And like I said, a lot of these practices have been taken from their original context and like twisted into a capitalist thing. We're not going to do that here. I will not be recommending apps to you that sell you guided meditation. I think it's important that we acknowledge their context, because context helps inform the intent, and the intent, surprise, the intent of none of these is to make you more productive at work.
I remember the first way that I ever like learned about meditation, and I genuinely, when I was growing up, thought it was not a real thing. I thought it was just something that people talked about people doing, but nobody actually did it. And I had an uncle named Paul, who was an 8th level black belt in Taekwondo. And he also was a Buddhist. And when he passed away, I inherited some of his things. That was how I first learned about Buddhism at all. And I was like a teenager at this point. I was really curious about it because I always remembered my Uncle Paul being such a fun and kind and inviting person, always making space for everyone and just being my favorite relative. That was really what kind of got me looking into it. And so I was looking into it as much as a teenager properly can.
I think you make an excellent point that in most of these types of meditation, the goal is not self. The goal is to help self engage with those around us.
Yeah, definitely.
It's not just a thing you're doing for yourself. I'm going to cover quite a bit about meditation, but not all of it. I'm also going to talk about the actual structural changes your brain undergoes when you meditate regularly, because the thing that really got me to say, okay, this is worth my time, and it's really common for autistic people to need to know, and ADHDers too, what is this doing? Don't just tell me to do this. I need to understand what it's actually doing in order to get myself to do it. Like, I need the whole picture, right?
Yeah, so, yeah, I could see how that would be helpful.
Yeah, so I'm going to cover why the fuck you'd want to meditate and what it does to your brain. So why the fuck would you want to meditate?
Meditation. Pick up chicks. No, wait.
No, not really. Maybe, not really.
Nah.
Meditation for, I'm going to filter something through my special interests. It's like weightlifting for the brain.
I think so, that's a really apt metaphor, yeah. From what I know about it, anyway.
Because when you do something regularly, like lifting weights, your brain starts creating new neural pathways to make it easier and take less energy to do this activity you're doing on the regular. My brain has said, oh, bench pressing. Okay, let's recruit more muscle fibers. Let's get faster and quicker at telling, you know, this compound movement. And I don't have to think about my form really anymore because I've done it so much. And the reason I don't have to think about my form anymore and I just snap into it is because my brain has actually gone through structural changes because I bench pressed a lot. With meditation, it does the same thing, except this is an internal thing you're doing.
That makes a lot of sense.
It's you're creating these wider, like, faster train lines between this activity you do a lot often. Yeah. You started off with a one lane road and a bike and you do it more often and now it's a bullet train.
Yeah. So like what we call like muscle memory a lot of the time, but for a mental exercise.
For a mental exercise. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So meditation causes measurable structural changes in the human brain. The type of meditation determines what these changes are. But honestly, all types of them are good, and the type that you'll stick with the most is probably your best. They all generally have like stress and emotional regulation stuff they help you with. So kind of like exercise, the kind you'll do more often is probably the best.
That makes sense.
So some very cool things they've seen that meditation does to the brain. Are you familiar with what the amygdala does?
Oh, pop quiz. Amygdala, is that managing the autonomic nervous system?
That is the fear center of your brain.
Damn it. Ah,
with panic, anxiety. There's that book, Autistic Thinking, where it talks about how autistic brains tend to be different from non-autistic brains. One of the variations we tend to have is a larger amygdala. So with anxiety and like we're constantly having things trigger our nervous system, if we have an oversized amygdala, that's one of the reasons that some of us can have issues with emotional regulation. I probably have just a fat throbbing amygdala in there because I was born with the emotional regulation of a walnut.
Yeah. If you hear me say to Brienne, "What that thang doing?" I'm talking about her amygdala, clearly.
My amygdala, yeah.
Yeah.
But with regular meditation, imaging has shown that the amygdala actually shrinks.
Oh, wow. That's really cool. So, like, it literally, like, it straight
reduces
up gets smaller.
Reduces in size. Reduces in size. Clinically significant reduction in size. But what this does, it makes it easier not to get hijacked by your emotions and react calmly. So something might set you off, and instead of your amygdala going, "Freak out now," it's like, "Oh, I'm feeling that thing. Hold on. I don't know if you need to get involved." And yeah, you have more time to react calmly.
Yeah. And if you're listening to this and you're like me, who is a very traumatized individual, that sounds very appealing. I would love to do that. And I do recall back when I tried to learn meditation, I definitely remember there was a long period of time where I was just trying it and I had a very childish idea of what would happen essentially. And I was never quite sure if it was working. And then all of a sudden I just started kind of noticing that after I would do it, I would feel better in a very vague sense.
Yeah.
And eventually I just kind of fell out of the practice of doing it.
I'm going to explain to you why you felt better.
Oh.
The neurochemical reason you felt better.
Oh, hell yeah.
So one of the other changes that a brain can undergo with meditation is changes in activity to the prefrontal cortex. Now, pop quiz time. Do you know what this part does?
The prefrontal cortex. That's the, if I recall correctly, it's like the upper frontmost part of the brain, like right behind your forehead, right?
But what does that do?
That, if I recall correctly, is the behavior center of the brain, like your decision making?
That is where all the executives for the function like to hang out.
Okay, I was kind of
that
close.
That is on its focus-based stuff.
Okay,
the more in task-oriented things. So this is where a lot of the executive function skills happen.
Gotcha.
This is a part of our brain that has the most activity when we're paying focused attention to something.
Okay.
And meditation on fMRI has shown increased activity in the prefrontal cortex of people who meditate regularly.
Oh, interesting.
So I have an episode about executive function skills. If you missed that, you can go back because executive function is actually 12 different skills in a trench coat. But more activity in the prefrontal cortex can help with emotional control. It can help with impulsivity and runaway thoughts. When you have ADHD, the next part of the brain I'm going to talk about, the default mode network, just kind of takes over. And that's where you can have rumination, perseveration.
Rejection-sensitive dysphoria?
You know, I don't know that about RSD.
Oh, interesting.
That's a good question.
I feel like it might be. I don't know if it is or not.
It would make sense.
Yeah,
I didn't actually look that up, but it would make sense that that would be because the default mode network is where most of your self-referential thoughts happen. So RSD makes sense that would happen. But anyway, for your prefrontal cortex, it can help your ADHD. It gives you more hang time between having an emotion and then acting on impulse from that emotion.
I could use
that. It can help.
Yeah.
It can help with all of the executive function stuff. And again, I meditate regularly. And I'm still an ADHD bitch. So it's not like I suddenly don't have ADHD, but it doesn't take me 4 hours to change my bedding anymore.
I saw an ad for a simple salt trick that gives you a boner for hours on end. So
yeah.
Will it do that?
That won't.
Oh, man.
And then the other place it changes is the default mode network, which I mentioned. The default mode network, anytime you're not actively focusing on anything, that's what fills in the blank space. Gotcha. That's where daydreaming happens. That's where self-referential thought happens. When you're not actively thinking about things, this is the part of your brain that takes over. When you have ADHD, this is the part of your brain that'll take over when you're in the middle of trying to focus on something. Mm. So someone without ADHD can consciously choose, I'm focusing and now I'm not. So meditation can reduce default mode network activity.
Gotcha. I could, that sounds good. I could definitely use that because I think that's definitely, of all of my ADHD symptoms, that is the one that I struggle with because genuinely, I feel like if someone were to like put a gun to my head and say, focus on this one thing for 30 seconds and don't look at anything else, don't talk about anything else, I would get shot. Like I would lose because I can't, I genuinely, it's such a struggle to try and just focus on something. Even with my ADHD medication, it's so difficult. Yeah.
This might help. The self-referential part of the default mode network can also have you replaying social interactions, autistic friends, going down thought spirals. Yeah. It can reduce how much you perseverate. Again, ADHD friends. Obsessive thoughts. And as someone with OCD, I like this part of it too. And it helps you kick it back to the prefrontal cortex. The real tangible benefits of meditating: better focus and memory. You're literally making new neural pathways to help you focus better. It also helps stave off age-related cognitive decline.
Oh, interesting. That makes a lot of sense. You know, it's like they say people who, I think we talked about at one point how exercise is like one of the best ways to prevent. Mm-hmm. God, I wish I could remember which episode it was, but you definitely did an episode talking about how if you exercise throughout your life, you are more likely mm-hmm. to be able to do those exercises when you're older. So it's a good indicator. It's the same thing, but with your brain.
Yep. With meditation, the point is not to eliminate internal distractions, but to practice getting better at recognizing when you're distracted and refocusing, which is the thing that I was not clear on ages ago. Another benefit: reduced anxiety and better emotional regulation. If you have OCD and you're listening, I personally, this is one thing that has helped me the most. It's reduced my overall anxiety. It helps me acknowledge my intrusive thoughts without getting swept up in them as easily. And it helps all kinds of anxiety by kicking in the parasympathetic nervous system, which is your rest and digest. It helps you not get stuck in the fight or flight mode. And it also reduces your baseline cortisol level, which is the stress hormone. And when you reduce someone's baseline cortisol, if it's elevated, it can help reduce brain fog and help with memory problems too. Another interesting thing, it improves your heart rate variability. And if you're not a gym girly, gender neutral like me, you might not know what that is, but that is a measure of the variance between your heartbeats. Basically, a higher HRV is a measure of how much your autonomic nervous system can recover. So I have POTS. Even though I'm really active, my HRV is not as high as you would think it would be for someone who works out as much as I do, but I literally have autonomic dysfunction. But that HRV is a generally helpful measurement for seeing how well your nervous system adapts to stress. So higher HRV means faster recovery. For those of us with autistic meltdowns, working on helping your nervous system be less reactive to stress and adapt a little better can help reduce how often we're having meltdowns.
That makes a lot of sense. Yeah.
So one of the ways it improves attention, meditation of most kinds increases your dopamine.
Oh, it just straight up just says, boop, here you go.
Straight up, your brain says, oh yeah, I'll cook up some more of that and just boop, out some more dopamine.
Yeah, you know, that makes a lot of sense because all of the kinds of meditation that I have done, it's always felt good. Like I've never not.
Yeah, that's one of the that's one of the reasons. When you're done, you feel good. It you got dopamine.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Quite literally, your brain quite literally jizzed out some feel good neurotransmitter because you meditated.
You know, I've always struggled to get my body to make dopamine when I exercise, but now that I think about it, meditation was one of those things where my brain was like, oh, yeah, I like this. So we can do this.
And it's still making it when you exercise, even if you don't enjoy it. You just might not like the exercising that you're doing. So you're like, yeah, okay.
True. That's true.
Did you know that meditation can help you shit better?
I had no idea.
So the gut-brain axis is a very real thing.
Interesting.
When your brain thinks you are in peril, it says we do not need to have all of this blood pumping to the digestive system. We need that in the heart and lungs because you're about to run away from a lion. It might be a risky email you sent and it doesn't know that it's not a lion.
Yeah.
But one of the reasons when you're panicked, you can get sick to your stomach is because your body's quite literally saying, shut that shit down. We got to get this to the heart and lungs. We have to run for our lives.
Literally, shut that shit down.
Shut that shit down.
Yeah.
Conditions that are affected by stress, like IBS, also PTSD, which doesn't have to do with your shitting, but it is another condition that stress can affect, can be helped with regular meditation.
Nice.
So the vagus nerve is one of the cranial nerves, and it goes directly into your tummy guts. Meditation puts your body into rest and digest mode versus fight or flight, reduces cortisol, which helps reduce some of that tummy inflammation, and it can help be a component of helping your IBS. Again, doesn't cure these things, but it's just a tool you have to help you.
That's interesting. I almost wonder, since you mentioned that it kind of helps with, you know, vagus nerve reaction kind of stuff, I wonder if that would be helpful for people like me that get vasovagal syncope, like when I see my own blood and I get woozy and sweaty and clammy and dizzy. I wonder if it might help lessen
that. No, that would make sense.
Yeah.
That would make sense. I don't know. I didn't look that up. I think that's a logical move to say that it might, but I'm not sure.
Get to it, science people.
Someone probably has looked at it.
Probably, yeah, true.
So there's some categories of meditation. And the different types of meditation offer different benefits, but again, it's whatever one you're going to do more. The most common and the easiest to dip your toes into is focused attention meditation.
Gotcha.
You focus on a single thing. You practice returning your focus to that thing when your thoughts start wandering. This is the most common type. There are so many things you can focus on in the hundreds of types of meditation out there. You can focus on your breath, a mantra, a candle flame, a certain area of the body, a certain idea, a certain concept, a certain sensation. There's so many things people focus on. The most common and most accessible thing to focus on is your own breath, which is usually what I'm doing. And with focusing on your own breath, it also has the added benefit of getting you to do more deep breathing, which is, again, really good for calming your nervous system down. So focused attention meditation is best for improving cognition, emotional regulation, and strengthening the prefrontal cortex. Then there's open monitoring meditation.
I haven't heard of this.
This one sounds like kind of meta, and it's a little more advanced than focused meditation, like focused attention, but it's totally achievable. It is not about focusing on an individual thing, but rather viewing your stream of consciousness and thoughts as a detached observer. There's a very common thing to describe it as taking the filmmaker approach. You're watching, but you are not in the scene yourself. For me, I feel like it's personally helped my OCD a lot.
Interesting.
So it's about becoming an observer and not being inside of the thought. You are outside of the thought. You are not swept away by it.
Interesting.
You're just merely observing that you're having it. So before I started meditating, one of the things my therapist helped me with to kind of think of my intrusive thoughts was think I have a ghost who occasionally haunts my brain. Oh. The ghost does not live here. The ghost is not part of the house. The ghost is here. I acknowledge that the ghost is here. I'm not pretending it's not here, but I also don't have to talk to the ghost or else it'll stay longer. The more I react to the ghost, the longer the ghost is going to hang out. The ghost will come haunt me again, and that's fine. I can just watch the ghost and keep doing my thing, which is essentially having me do this concept in open monitoring meditation.
One thing that I really struggle with in a lot of mental health general settings is the concept of sitting with your feelings. I've always struggled to really grasp what that looks like, because I would ask my therapist or, you know, people that I'm talking to about this, like, how does one actually sit with a feeling? And it sounds like this is a way of doing that.
Yeah, because I can really see how I'm feeling, but not get swept up in the feeling itself. I wasn't clear on how to do this until I got kind of better at focused attention. At the end, I'll share one of my favorite meditation practice that actually includes both focused attention and open monitoring. But open monitoring is best for helping emotional regulation, rumination, perseveration, practice feeling an emotion without necessarily reacting. And for me personally, there's not a source for this, but this is the one that helps me manage intrusive thoughts easier. So a third kind is loving kindness meditation. And this is also called metta, which is a Buddhist meditation cornerstone. So this meditation practice is focused on cultivating positive, loving thoughts to those around you and your community.
That sounds so nice.
There are different types of loving kindness meditation. I'm actually going to talk about one at the end. That is the type that I kind of vibe with. Loving kindness meditation has been shown to increase vagal tone. So basically to make your vagus nerve less reactive.
Oh, interesting.
Autistic people tend to have lower vagal tone at baseline because cognitive overwhelm triggers ours, which is so easy to happen. So ours is kind of on a hairpin trigger. So stuff that we can do as autistic people to increase vagal tone can help us not have meltdowns and shutdowns as quickly, recognize when we're getting overwhelmed sooner. But there's some interesting stuff that loving kindness meditation helps with, and there's studies on it that are wild to me. And one of them, I was like, it does what? It reduces migraine pain.
Oh.
There was a study, it's Tonelli et al. From 2014, saw that just a brief loving kindness meditation session reduced pain immediately in people having a migraine. And it was also self-reported that the people with chronic migraine felt some emotional tension relief.
That's so interesting.
Yeah. Decreased chronic pain, decreased PTSD and schizophrenia symptoms. It strengthens the part of the brain used for processing emotions, like by actually increasing gray matter in those areas related to emotional regulation.
The schizophrenia symptoms part is really interesting to me too.
And it actually, there was a small study where it seemed to reduce the biological age in a group of women, straight up longer telomeres.
That's wild. It's really interesting that this one particular type of meditation would have all of these pronounced effects compared to other types of meditation, which of course have their own like benefits and things, but there's so much physicality to the love and kindness meditation. That's interesting.
And I also think it's interesting that this is the one that I feel like people know about less.
Yeah, I've never heard of
it. It is the one that is less helpful for executive function and less helpful to capitalists and more about fostering community and being less individualistic.
Yeah.
It's like, that is the one that they don't talk about as much.
I think this must be the kind that my Uncle Paul was doing. I don't think I ever learned the term for it, but like I was looking into general like meditation stuff and I think I was mishmashing all kinds of stuff, but
your Uncle Paul was Buddhist. He absolutely was doing this.
That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. So some of my favorite types of meditation. I really enjoy Vipassana. That is a traditional Buddhist practice dating back to the 6th century. And Vipassana is a Pali word meaning clear seeing or insight.
Mm.
This is the one that Western wellness has kind of co-opted as mindfulness and often uses it to be more productive.
Mm. Yeah, mindfulness meditation is what I ended up essentially doing probably the most of, or at least that's what I ended up calling it and saying, oh yeah, I do mindfulness meditation, because that was just what was accessible to me, gosh, a decade and a half ago.
And it was, you were probably doing Vipassana, but the Western thing just named it mindfulness.
Right, exactly.
There are some conflicting views on how to practice Vipassana, but it generally starts with very focused attention on your breath. And as you go, you widen the scope of attention to your physical sensations, feeling the air on your skin, your points of contact on your chair, wherever you're sitting. You observe your bodily sensations, but you don't get caught up in them. And then you expand to your thoughts, where you acknowledge the thoughts without being in them. So you go from focused attention to open monitoring, and you kind of expand more. Mm-hmm. That's most of how I've seen Vipassana. There is conflicting information, but that's generally most of the like guided scripts and stuff I've seen. So the goal is not to think of nothing. I still have ADHD. I'm going to get distracted. I'm going to think about what I'm going to have for lunch. I'm going to think about Mookie. I'm going to think about you. I'm going to think about a bunch of stuff. The goal is to recognize when you are distracted and redirect yourself. That is the thing you're creating these new neural pathways for. That is the thing you're practicing. And I know that I've gotten better at meditation. Not because I don't have to do that as much, per se, but that I more quickly go, oop, oop, focus on your breath, oop, focus on your breath. Like, I'm not realizing I'm at the end of the meditation. I was thinking about the TV show MASH, you know, like.
I know one thing that helped me when I was trying to learn how to do it, I always felt like, am I doing it right? Am I doing it correctly? I'm just thinking about this body part or this sensation in my breathing or something like that. And I kind of kept getting distracted by the thought of, am I doing this right? And I feel like if you are trying to do it, that's it. That's the thing, right? It's like trying.
Yeah, that's the whole point is the effort.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. And something that's been really cool. So I was talking to my therapist because I was like, hey, the past couple months that I've been doing Vipassana meditation, my eyes have been watering so much, like so fucking much, like tears rolling down my face. I'm not crying, but you would think I was chopping an onion, but it's not painful, like onion. Mm-hmm. And my therapist told me when your parasympathetic nervous system kicks over and you get into rest and digest, if you're really having a calming moment, it can increase production in the lacrimal glands in your eyes and make you produce more tears. So I've gotten to a point in Vipassana where I have tears streaming down my face every day because it's chilling me out that much.
Yeah.
And it's not to say like there's a goal to have tears running down your face, but like I'm just like, oh, I did chill out. My face is all wet.
Yeah.
Sometimes the thing distracting me is my wet face.
Yeah. So if that happens to you, just know you're not doing anything wrong. It's just your body.
Yeah, you're not doing anything wrong. Just going, it's working.
Yeah, just releasing some of that tension.
I needed that.
Yeah.
Also, I get a pretty big amount of people coming to see me for my job saying that they feel like their attention span has been destroyed by short form video social media.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And this can help you get some of that back, and there's a very low barrier to entry. Also, if you are wanting to meditate but you regularly use ChatGPT to help you with executive function tasks, you're pissing in the wind. The meditation will not help you. You're actively not using those in your day, those things in your day to day. So,
yeah.
Just like the same thing as I say, if you want to use a bunch of skincare but you don't use sunscreen, pissing in the wind.
Exactly. Yeah.
You're not doing anything.
You need to use those parts of your brain and do some critical
thinking. Or lose it.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
Like I have. I work in IT, and of course, everyone in IT is either AI sucks, I don't want to use it, or check out this new AI thing I just did, and like how much this AI, and like those people, it's like I can just see them relying on it more and more.
More and more and more and more.
And
James was saying that last time their mom came to visit them, that she was just asking it everything, like what's good at this restaurant, and not like looking.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah. That's, so yeah.
Anyway,
I don't want to go on a rant about that, but you have to do these things, these uncomfortable things.
Yeah.
But yeah, this, when you're complaining about not being able to pay attention for 30 seconds, Vipassana can really help.
Hell yeah.
My other favorite kind, which some people claim is not meditation, and I don't know why some people do and some people don't, is yoga nidra, or yogic sleep is also what it gets called. Some people say it's not meditation, I was finding. I'm like, how do you not? They say it's a relaxation technique, but it literally involves focusing, whatever.
Yeah.
This one I like to use as a tool when I feel like I'm about to have a meltdown. I forget what even set me off, but it was like a couple weeks ago. We're about to play D&D. We had 15 minutes until D&D, and I was absolutely in the throes of a meltdown, and I was able to have the wherewithal to get my computer out, go to one of my saved yoga nidra guided meditations that was 12 minutes long, do that for 12 minutes, roll up just in time for D&D to be like, hi, I'm Jorkin de Peanuts, the goblin bard. I wasn't crying. So I like this one as part of my like reactive plan when I feel like I'm about to have a meltdown.
Yeah. And I think I maybe earlier got this confused with the
Vipassana. I think you did, because this is the one I recommended to you the other day when you're having a panic attack.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, but still, you see how you're meditating on certain things. Like,
I got them mixed up because it seemed like the concepts seemed very similar to me.
There are differences. Both Vipassana and Yoga Nidra have structures to them. And the Yoga Nidra structure is a very like firm structure. This comes from yogic text. This comes from the practice of yoga, but you are not moving your body in anything but corpse pose. You get to do this in bed.
Yeah.
So this is part of yoga. It is a state where your body and brain are at rest, like while you're sleeping, but you maintain consciousness and awareness. This is not just chilling with your eyes closed. Your brain waves literally change to the sleep ones, which I will get into. It is structured. There is a pretty like firm structure for yoga nidra, but each part of the meditation helps you get further into this state. You focus on your breath. You call in your sankalpa or intention, which is in the present tense. It's something affirmative. And then you have your focus shift to different areas of the body, which in Western stuff just gets called body scan meditation a lot of the time. There is no sankalpa. There is none of the other stuff included in it. So if you've done body scan meditation, it's kind of familiar. But in yoga nidra, it's more nitty gritty. Like it'll be like the tip of your tongue, the base of your throat, the center of your throat.
Exactly, yeah. And like I remember, like, at one point they mentioned, like, specifically, like, the right side of your jaw. Like,
yeah. So you get very nitty gritty and you're focusing on those things. So for people who say it's not a type of meditation, I don't get that, because it still feels like it takes the same effort as, like, focusing on my breath. I am focusing on those. It's just shifting and I'm following it. Yeah. So yoga nidra is usually guided. There are some great guided yoga nidra stuff on YouTube, and there's some, like, I found some on Apple Music the other day. Mm. Okay, so you focus on different areas of the body, and then you often engage in some visualization, usually having some elements of nature. You reflect on your sankalpa or your intention once again, and then you focus on the breath once more, and you reflect on your practice. This is very reductive. If you do yoga nidra, I know it's got more like solid steps to it, but the basics of it are that. Yoga nidra has been shown to improve red blood cell count, improve your hormone levels and general hormone status, like for cortisol and melatonin and stuff. It increases endogenous dopamine release, so increases dopamine, and increases melatonin production. Which is not just for sleep. It increases melatonin production because it activates the pineal gland. And that is the gland that controls your circadian rhythm. But that's also what helps regulate menstrual cycles.
Oh, interesting.
So a lot of the research they've done on yoga nidra is for people like me with endometriosis and period issues. And there are some cool studies where it actually helps a lot of us with menstrual issues.
That's really cool.
Again, not going to fix it. I still have endometriosis. Like, it's not that's not gone, but it helps.
Yeah, I think that's a good distinction to make also, is that nothing we're talking about, you're not going to be like, oh, I'm cured of this thing. Like,
yeah, no. But when if something helps my period, like I don't even know if they would find that I have PCOS anymore. I've been managing it for so long. But like my periods were so irregular for a very long time that if you told me that I could do something where I'm just laying there for a little bit every day and it would help me not just be on my period for a month and a half straight, I'd be like, yeah. "If is it even 5% better? Okay, I'll do it."
Yeah, absolutely. This is notable, scientifically measurable improvement in things, totally free. Anyone can do this.
It can help with menstrual cycles, and it also can help prevent conditions like Alzheimer's and Parkinson's. Since Yoga Nidra tangentially helps those things because it is activating the pineal gland,
you're working out those sleep muscles.
The thing that I think is the wildest, Yoga Nidra also induces delta brainwave activity.
Really?
So most meditation activates theta brainwaves. Theta waves are what happen when your brain is daydreaming or in the lighter phases of sleep. Delta waves, those are what are happening when you're having like that deep ass dreamless sleep. But you're getting some of these while conscious.
Interesting. Yeah.
So there's been a lot looking at it for things that might cause fatigue, like fibromyalgia. And I noticed an interesting pattern on a lot of the YouTube videos that I use for Yoga Nidra. There are people with ME/CFS who say that this helps them get enough of a boost to, you know, maybe take a shower. They still have ME/CFS, like they're still dealing with, I think, the gnarliest thing that long COVID does to people. But to be able to have something that costs nothing that they can do laying in bed that might let them be able to go take a shower.
Right.
Have the energy to do that.
That's huge.
Quality of life changing stuff. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's super cool. And this is the one that the Army tried to call like eye rest. the other thing they call it is non-sleep deep rest, but not the Army. I think that's just the other, we've stripped it of its original.
They had to Americanize it.
American. I don't, yoga, I ain't doing yoga, yeah.
New from Apple iRest, order a cheese pizza from Wolverine using your theta brain delta waves.
I love Yoga Nidra. If I didn't sleep well the night before, sometimes I will drink my coffee and just do a quick session to help get me the energy to function as a human being. Sometimes I do it before bed so I can chill out. It helps you achieve deeper sleep too.
As a person with narcolepsy, I had to, a few times, break my concentration to some degree to kind of, like, say, don't fall asleep. Hold on.
I've actually had to have conversations with Violet about, like, no, I can be tired and not be able to go to sleep. I can lay down and be comfy as hell and be wide awake.
That's really something that I genuinely struggle with. I have what they call type 2 narcolepsy, which is narcolepsy without cataplexy. So I very rarely have episodes of like falling asleep from fully awake. It's very uncommon for me. The only time I really had something kind of like that was when I had a muscle relaxer for a back issue I was having. And that really just...
That was scary.
Yeah, no, I was at work and I was like...
That was scary.
Yeah, I was just like, hey, coworker of mine, I'm just gonna sit on the floor. Narcolepsy, bye. Yeah, but with the Yoga Nidra, I definitely felt like if I was in a very elevated, like heightened state of mind, and if I'm having trouble like getting myself to go to sleep, one thing that even having narcolepsy, I still sometimes struggle with is the nighttime procrastination stuff, where I stay up too late because I feel like I want more time during the day to do things, because capitalism, it can be really hard to get myself to let myself relax enough to fall asleep, because all it really takes for me is just relaxing and laying down and I go to sleep. So I feel like this could help me. Sorry. There's downsides, trust me.
I know, there's downsides, no. I just wish I could give you a little bit of my insomnia, and you could give me a little bit of yours, and maybe we'd even out and sleep like normal people.
Last night, I did not sleep very good. During work today, there was several times where I had to make a deliberate effort to not lean back too far in my chair, because I would fall asleep.
Get too comfy and fall asleep.
Yeah. Literally, yeah. So it's definitely downsides to it. But what I'm saying is, I think it's something that I could even use just to help put my brain in a position to be like, all right, let's stop procrastinating
on this. It's sleepy time. Yeah.
It's sleepy time now. Let's let it happen.
So the final one that I like to do is a form of loving kindness meditation. And it's going to sound miserable, but hang in there with me. It's Tonglen meditation.
Tonglen? So
T-O-N-G-L-E-N. Tonglen is a Tibetan Buddhist practice of loving kindness meditation.
Oh, cool.
Now, it involves breathing in the pain and suffering of others and breathing out kindness and mercy. So this one, I would say, is more advanced. You saw that the benefits for loving kindness meditation were not the same and not about the reduction in anxiety and not about that. So this is, like I said, these are tools in a toolbox. This is a different tool. I really like, my therapist got me into this and sent me stuff by, and I forgive me if I get their name wrong, Pema Chodron, P-E-M-A-C-H-O-D-R-O-N, who is a Tibetan Buddhist monk of the Shambhala tradition. And she has some great stuff on YouTube for kind of explaining it, dipping your toes in, some guided audio to help you with loving kindness meditation. There is a structure. I like Tonglen because it acknowledges the pain and suffering around me, the pain and suffering inside of me. It doesn't have me ignore it. It encourages me to be present in that, but not consumed by it, and transform that suffering into kindness and compassion. And compassion, by definition, requires you to take action in reducing the suffering of others and self. I think this one is helpful to me right now because I live in Minneapolis, and this encourages you to sit with the feeling but not get lost in despair. And I like that the goal is compassion for others, because the antidote to despair is action, and helping others helps us all. And if we all took some of that suffering and we all carried that load, it would be a lot less for all of us. Yeah. To me, this very much fits into the idea that nobody is free until we are all free. With current events, I think stuff like Tonglen meditation can be a tool to help give you the drive and the presence of mind to not get swept away in all of the suffering, but understand that you have something to offer to reduce that in others. So Tonglen helps us sit with suffering, accept that it's there, not get too attached to that feeling, but turn that into loving kindness for those around us. So I know that sounds like a more esoteric take, but you will build your resilience and help your community in the long run if you can do more of this. Yeah, meditation. I didn't cover everything, but I think it's neat and it doesn't cost anything. You don't have to be able to do a whole hell of a lot. You just lay there. Plenty of good stuff on YouTube.
I think meditation is really freaking cool.
Yeah, go do some meditation. Yeah, preferably honoring the origins of where that meditation practice came from, and not using this wisdom that these people have had since, I mean, at least one of them I know, since the 6th century. And not using that for capitalism and individualism, but using it to be more present and to be better at being in community with others.
Yeah.
Well, I think I'm going to go meditate on your boobs.
I'm going to go meditate on your boobs. We should get two bathtubs.
If I'm meditating on your boobs and you're meditating on my boobs, who's flying the plane?
Oh, no.
Who's flying the plane?
Oh, God.
Hey gang, before Before I get to thanking our Patreon supporters, I would like to make you aware of a mutual aid opportunity. In our shop at the BalanaArts.com merch hub, you will find a Fuck Ice sticker. All proceeds from this sticker will go to Mutual Aid here in Minnesota, and if you follow me on Instagram and follow Mixnomer on Instagram, you can see that we did our first donation to Community Aid Network Minnesota, which is a long-standing, long-established community aid and mutual aid network here in the Twin Cities area. So there's a Fuck Eye sticker that Violet designed. 100% of everything that we sell from that is going to Mutual Aid here in Minnesota, because though they have pulled out some ICE agents, there's still a lot here. We still have people being disappeared. We still have people who are not safe to leave their homes. We still have people who cannot pay their rent because they were stuck at home since December. It's still very much needed here. So if you hate ICE and you love your community and you would like to help my community and these neighbors who have welcomed us with open arms these past couple of years since we moved from Texas, you can go to the Balana Arts merch shop at BalanaArts.com and go pick up that sticker. And now I'd like to thank our Patreon supporters like Carlene, Bethany Glass, Laura Kramer, Lilith Rain, Janice Weston, Anarchista, Percy, Nanya B, Kate Michigoose, K Genius, Chibs1012, Dave Peril, Megan E, Carl Brooks, Natasha Neves, Gus Lutzi, Helen Clifford, Sewing Seraph, Rachel Rachelson, Fintago, and Randy Lovings. You know the deal, y'all. If you want to help us out, you can tell your friends about the show. We don't take paid ads. We don't pay for advertising. We grow entirely by word of mouth. And every time you recommend us in a Facebook group or to your friends or on Reddit or anywhere you happen to lurk IRL or on the internet, you help us out a ton. I rarely check our numbers, but when I go to upload a new episode of something, I can actually like see when y'all have told somebody in a way that is reaching a wider audience, and it's pretty cool to see. So thank you all for a history of doing that. And if you are a newer listener and you want to help us out, just go tell a friend, have a friend listen. If you think you have a friend who maybe should take up meditation, send them, you know, send them this episode. If you want to help us out even further, you can subscribe on your podcatcher of choice. You can also leave a cute little rating or review or comment on your podcatcher of choice. The more engagement we get on the individual podcatchers, the more we get recommended in algorithms, the more active the show is. Active shows are going to get more attention from people when they don't think that, you know, the people listening don't care enough to engage. Any engagement you could do on your respective podcatcher helps us out a lot and helps us get recommended by those algorithms to people who like shows similar to Infodumpies. If you're in a spot where you could help us out financially, you can find a link to the Mixnomer Patreon page in the show details. Patreon tiers start at just $1, and then it covers everything that Mixnomer has done, will be doing. I'm already working on figuring out what exactly I want to offer for the new show that we start recording next week. Actually, when this comes out, it'll be in a couple of days we start recording. But basically, anything we do at Mixnomer, that is the one-stop shop for supporting us and getting the bonus goodies. So if you're in a place to help us out financially and you would like to do so, you can find a link to the Mixnomer Patreon page. And if you want to hang out with us, you can find a link to the Mixnomer Discord server in the show details as well. I love the Discord server. They, like, have... We did a cute rock exchange for Valentine's Day, and we played this game, Another Crab's Treasure, on a stream last night and had a great time. We'll play Jackbox games together. It is the most supportive group of sweethearts you're ever going to find. The vibes are immaculate. Even if you just want to come and lurk and watch a bunch of people be incredible sweethearts to each other, that's perfectly fine. We welcome any level of engagement. So if you'd like to join the Mixnomer Discord server, you can find a link to that in the show details as well. But that's all I've got for you this time, my friends. Until next time, clever sign off.